Lobbyist 50 would like to congratulate Jeremy Steineman for winning the cutest award for Problem Set Zero. A round of applause if we could. So Jeremy is in fact class of 08. He's a concentrator in Romance Languages and Literature, and he took CS50 because I've always wanted to learn computer science, and this is my last chance before graduation. So we have a little coupon here for Jeremy if he's here this morning. Jeremy? Jeremy? Well, all right. So fortunately, those of you in Jeremy's section also benefit. He's in Tova's section, since the award, besides this little certificate, is a catered section of ice cream or pizza of Jeremy's choice for Tova's section this coming week. So recall that in Problem Set Zero, we also had awards allotted for the funniest and the most amazing, based on our very scientific process for adjudicating this. We give you this as the funniest. Okay, so that's enough of that. So CS50 congratulates Vivek Sant. Come on up if he is here. So you two, and you are in Yao's section, will be bestowed with ice cream or pizza of your choice. Congratulations to Vivek. The backstory here for what's called Dancing Malin is that Vivek is a freshman, class of 1-1, and my Scratch project is basically a series of animations that doesn't require any user input, so just kick back, watch, and enjoy. It depicts a fairly typical CS50 lecture. So finally, for our most amazing award, I need a volunteer to come up here and man the controls. A volunteer. Come on up. What's your name? Matt. Come on up, Matt. And this is called Scratch Scratch Revolution. Uh-oh. Okay. Whenever you're ready. So these are the directions.
I'm not very good at this game if it's anything like the real one.
It's actually a lot like
work it, make it, do it, makes us all the better, faster, stronger.
That don't kill me, can only make me stronger. I need you to hurry up, man, cause I can't wait much longer. I know I got to be right, man, cause I can't wait much longer. Man, I've been waiting all night, man, that's how long I've been on ya. You know how long I've been on ya. Christians don't actually know ya. Since OJ on ice and toners, don't act like I never told ya. You know how long I've been on ya. Since Christians don't actually know ya. Since OJ on ice and toners, don't act like I never told ya.
So CS50 also congratulates Anne Chi for the most amazing award. If Anne is here, come on down, Anne. Another round of applause if we could. Anne is a senior majoring in math and physics and is in Charlotte's section. So Charlotte's section will also get ice cream or pizza. Congratulations. Okay, we of course, to be clear, did love them all. But these were the three that we ultimately decided to award those prizes to. So you may have seen on your way in, and if you haven't, do see on your way out, the so-called Games of 15. Let me ask, if you haven't already, take a pencil or your finger and go ahead and pop out the circle that's really just meant there to keep everything steady. It's not meant to be there in the long run. This is perhaps a game you remember from your childhood. The goal of which is to sort all of the numbers, top to bottom, left to right, from 1 to 15. Needless to say, you've been given the solution. What I'd like you to do is hand the color you carefully picked out on your way in, pass it to the person next to you, and ask them to spend a moment shuffling your game piece. Shuffle it up good. For those of you following along at home, it's this that we've handed to everyone today. This is meant as a teaser for your problem set 3, which is not due for a couple of weeks. We won't be releasing it until next Friday, since recall Quiz 0 is coming up next week instead of any problem set. But you'll be implementing for problem set 2 this game of 15, using your newfound skills and savvy with C. The backstory for these 300 games of 15 is that I could not find them locally, and so I actually recruited my mother to go to Party City in Connecticut on your behalf. And so my mother not only says hello, but also has made me promise one thing. For years, when I taught this class at the Harvard Extension School, which was an introductory class on computers and technology for Extension School students, I often used to use my mom as an example in lectures. And I would say such things as, "So easy my mom could do it," or, "Don't type in all capital letters like my mom does." So, as part of this deal with Party City, I have now had to promise my mother never again to use her as an example in class. So that is now my promise to her. The funny backstory, too, is that when buying 300 of these games, my mom also asked for the educational discount. And when the gentleman at the counter then proceeded to ask her, "Oh, with what middle school are you?" But no, he gave Harvard the discounts nonetheless. So that's probably sufficiently shuffled. Pass the color back to the person you took it from. And your job for Monday is to solve this puzzle over the next few days. And then a week from now, you'll be implementing the same. So without further ado, we'll finish up our discussion of searching and sorting today. So recall that on Wednesday, this is the end here then of week 3, we looked at problems like searching and finding values as efficiently as possible. And the simplest approach we took initially was that thing called linear search. And we ultimately decided that linear search, if you've got n things to search, whether it's doors or boxes or cells in an array or people, what's the worst case running time of a linear search algorithm in terms of this big O concept? Big O event, all right? But we did better than that, and we improved upon that using this sort of divide and conquer strategy, specifically known as binary search. And with binary search, we were able to whittle our running time down to what in Big O? Yeah, so Big O of log n. And as we saw sort of graphically and we looked at numerically, there's a significant difference, especially as n gets large, between a linear algorithm and a so-called logarithmic algorithm. But that wasn't sort of an easy point to get to, because there's always this price you pay and there's always a cost. So one of the themes henceforth in this course is going to be that you rarely get something better for free. If you want a faster program, you're going to have to pay for it somehow. What was the assumption, or what was the cost of implementing binary search and thus getting a faster running time? What was the word you tossed out?
Sorting.
Organization of that data. So you had to assume that the numbers behind those pieces of paper on the board the other day were themselves sorted. So that begs the question, if you can finally optimize your searching, assuming the numbers are sorted, well, what price did you have to pay up front to sort those n values? Well, here's n values, n equals 8 specifically. They're pretty much randomly shuffled. In how many steps, for any definition of the word steps, is it going to take to sort n elements like this? Specifically 8. How many steps, how many repetitions of something? Interpret as you will. Anyone at all? See, these games are more interesting than lecture already. You can hear the clicking. No? All right, well, let's do this. So you're not offering up an answer verbally, so it's time for one of our moments of awkwardness where I need 8 of you to come on up here and make this process of sorting more real. I think I can commit to this. We have 8 non-speaking roles and 1 speaking role. So why don't we raffle off the 8 non-speaking role first? Who would like to be the best number of all, number 8? Yes, come on down. Matt? Matt's 2 for 2 today. Thomas, how about number 7? Thomas will be number 7, and taped to the back there is a legal form. All right. 6, who would like to be 6? Yeah, come on down. How about 5 and back? I'm up to 4. Who would like to be 4? Actually, 1's the best, so they're getting better now, the numbers, right? Who wants 4? We got 6 and 5. 4, come on down. All right, 3, 2, and 1 are left. 3, come on down, come on down. 2, and the best number of all, 1 is left. And actually, it doesn't have to be that awkward. You guys can actually remain here in front. 2, and number 1. Come on. Come on. Come now. I'll hold out longer. Okay, you 7 were brave enough to volunteer. Pick our 8th person, please. Okay, come on down. You are number 1. And now we need our 9th speaking role, someone who thinks they know what they're talking about. Come on down. All right, what's your name? Jeremy. All right, Jeremy, come on down. Okay, so hopefully, without direction, you guys lined yourselves up almost like that, so that's not bad. Let's do this just to make yourselves look like that. And Jeremy, come on down this way, and you can just stand here for a moment. Okay, so we have an array now of 8 individuals. They're randomly shuffled. Jeremy, your goal here is to sort these folks. Okay, and sorting can simply amount to telling them where to go or sort of gently placing them where you want them. Sort these folks from 1 to 8, left to right, please.
Okay. I have 8 here. 5. Can you move this? Can I have 1 for
All right, not bad. How'd he do? That's pretty good. That looks right. So how'd he do it? Someone else from the audience, describe, if you could, as precisely as possible, what Jeremy just did. Okay, I heard the word switch. He switched, yes. I'll agree with this. Switched how, right? Let's push a little harder. There was some switching going on. How did he go about switching folks? I mean, even if you're not sure what Jeremy was thinking, you can probably guess what you would do if you were in his switch situation. Okay, so try to get the numbers 1 and 8, the extremities, lined up properly, and then maybe worked your way inward. Agree, disagree? Is that what you did?
My goal was to get bigger numbers.
Okay. All right, good. So to get sort of the bigger numbers to bubble up to that side and ultimately end up there, and the smaller numbers to bubble up this way. Okay, so let's try to assess this now in general terms. If we've got 8, that is n people up here, how many steps might that have taken Jeremy in the worst case? Than what he just described. Okay, so I heard n, so that seems to make sense, right? Because if you have to just pluck a number and say go there, choose another number, go there, it seems like ultimately you're only going to have to give direction to 8 people, thus 8 steps. So is that to say that to sort n elements requires big O of n steps? No, I hear over here. So no, I hear from the former head teaching fellow of CS50. So no is correct, but again, we're sort of making some assumptions. In real terms, in human terms, that was pretty reasonable, right? Pluck out the 8 people you want, tell them where to go, and you're done. And you've talked to 8 people, and they're in place. But now think about this programmatically, and it was perhaps a tricky question because we didn't lay down the assumptions. If we're going to code up this algorithm, presumably we are going to use an array to store these 8 values. Well, if it's an array, now you got to start thinking in terms of for loops and maybe comparisons like less than or equal to or greater than. Now, if that's the case, and suppose just for the sake of argument, could I have 3 and 1 switch for a moment? So, Jeremy, suppose that this is your state of the world now. How many steps does it take to swap these or to sort this list? Thinking now in terms of these humans as an array. Okay, so why 3 steps? Okay, so just 1 step to swap the 2, but what assumption has even Jeremy just made now? Right, he knows where they are, and that's the catch. Now, you as a human are presumably sort of doing multiple things at once, and you can just take the aggregate view of things and be like, okay, you go here, you go here. here, you go here. Computer can't do that, right? The only way you guys have had thus far access to the elements of an array is to start from the left and work your way to the right. Start from the right, work your way to the left. Yes, you have random access. You can jump to the ith elements in an array, but you got to know where you want to end up. You have to know where that value is. So to formalize this, let me propose the following algorithm. And let me keep you guys here just one moment longer, because there was this nice theme in what Jeremy proposed, which was this swapping idea. And would you guys mind terribly just randomly sorting yourselves a little bit? We don't have to make it look like before. OK, that'll work. So now let's consider this. So I'm going to start so that I can put this in code. I can express this more formally, left to right. And I'm looking now at these two guys, 7 and 2. All right, immediately obvious to me, the computer, if I'm looking at array index 0 and array index 1, what should I be doing with these guys? All right, so now I know to swap them. So let's swap these two. Now, programmatically, I don't need to waste more time here. So let me iterate forward one step, so plus plus. And now I'm looking at 7 and 8. What do I need to do here? All right, so probably nothing. So let's leave it alone. Plus plus one more, 8 and 3. What do I need to do? Swap, obviously. Repeat, so 8 and 4. OK, 8 and 1, 8 and 5, 8 and 6. Am I done? Right, so clearly not just based on this example alone, but just conceptually, now we've got to do this again. Because in the best case, we might have moved number 8, Matt, all the way from the left, all the way to the right. But as a result, we might have pushed some other folks out of order. Right? We might have pushed them down this way. That might be OK, because 8 is now in the right place. And I only now need 7 more people in their right places. But we've got to repeat. Let's try this same, there's a naive approach. 2 and 7 are OK. 7 and 3, 7 and 4. 7 and 1, 7 and 5, and 7 and 6. OK, clearly not done yet, so where are we going next? Repeat. So let me let you guys execute this, but orderly. That's not orderly. You're 3. She's 2. So good. Stay. Stay. Yes. There we go. OK. We're almost there. What do we do now? We've gotten to the end of the list. Thomas and Matt are in order, so we finish that iteration. Come back to the end, 2 and 3. Nope. 1 and 3. OK, repeat, 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 repeat. We're done. And finally, repeat, 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 repeat. Done. How many steps did it take to sort n people? Good. So it is, in fact, n minus 1 plus n minus 2 plus n minus 3 plus n minus 4, because on each time we don't need to keep looking at Matt every iteration, right? As soon as Matt was in place, we could actually start short-circuiting this iteration here, and then on the next time here, and the next time here, because the idea being the rightmost side of the list is already sorted at that point, so we can cut some corners. But in the end, effectively what we're doing is what? I need to walk this list up to n places the first time I do it at all. But then how many times did I have to repeat that walk in front of this group of people? N times. So n times n, generally speaking, and we will wave our hands at the specific mathematics, is, at the end of the day, just big O of n squared. Right? And we promised on Wednesday that we're going to typically throw away constant numbers. We're going to get rid of a lot of numeric values in those expressions and really focus only on the biggest term, the highest degree in the so-called polynomial. So in this case, we're talking about order of n squared. Yeah. Good question. That's actually a perfect segue, because recall the other metric we looked at on Wednesday. What was the analog of big O when we want to talk about lower bound? So that was omega notation, right? So let's ask that question. In the worst case, it appears that this algorithm takes big O of n squared steps. Because worst case, the whole list is going to be what? Completely backwards, which means I need to move Matt 8 places over, and Thomas 7 places over, and the next folks 5 and 6 and 5 and 4 and 3 and so forth. But what about the best case? Well, what is the best possible situation that just by chance we might have at the beginning of this process? They're sorted. But if I were stupid about this and I just executed that same algorithm, how many times am I going to go checking and checking and checking? Well, it sounded like n squared, right? Walk the list n different times. But we can do better. What do you need to look for on every iteration if you want to short circuit this algorithm? Yeah? Right, whether you've made any swaps so far. Because if you haven't made any swaps, by the time you reach the end of the list, why would you bother walking the list again? Right? Nothing has changed about the state of your world. So in that case, omega notation is what for this algorithm? And if you actually perform that check. So to formalize, here might be the pseudocode for what's generally known as bubble sort or exchange sort. As we see here, repeat n times for each element. If it and its neighbor are out of order, swap. This program alone, four lines as it is, will swap any list of integers. And you can do it for strings even too if you have a way of comparing strings. Let's push a little harder and do one more time if you guys don't mind humoring us. Can you randomly shuffle yourselves again? And this time, how about we'll take the heat off of Jeremy here and ask from the audience, what's a fundamentally different way we could go about sorting this list? Because I would argue that this bubble sort method, though simple perhaps, is perhaps not immediately obvious that you would want to just check pairwise again and again and again. What's another way to sort these folks in a way that we could express formally in just a sentence or two? Yeah, in back. OK, so walk through the list, look at a person's number, and then insert them into the right location? OK, good. So we do have an array here. And so what we can do, because we have random access, so to speak, to the array, but using that bracket notation, we can start at the front of the list and see your person 6 will get to where you're supposed to be. I know how to get to array index 6 by doing array bracket 5 for the 6th location. And so let's go ahead and pretend to do that. So let's pull you out. Put you over into the right place, but there's a catch here. Right, so what do we want to do with number 4, who clearly doesn't fit next to number 6 right now? OK, so we could put him where 6 was. And just to make clear, what if we just said, guys, could you this way a little bit? That's perhaps foolish. Why? So I might have already put a lower order number, but that was sort of a monotonic change. I didn't change the ordering of you guys. But what was more troubling about this? Yes. So I just moved, you know, with the wave of my hands, 4 or 5 of you. But in computer terms, that's 5 additional steps to shift everyone in the array. So probably not so good. So what you just proposed is actually a good example of something. And it can be implemented in different ways, what we might call insertion sort. And I'll offer yet one other approach, solicit one other approach. Here's a list of folks. Suppose I'm starting at this end of the list. My goal is to sort this thing. What might be another approach to sort these guys, do you think? OK. All right, so that's an interesting idea, too. If I know I want all the smallest values here and the biggest numbers there, let's just find them in turn. So I'm going to start here and look. Ah, here's the number 1. That's a small number. I'm going to put him at the start of the list. No? Well, let's see. Do we know this is the smallest element if we want to execute this? Good. So we have access to variables. Let's just keep track of the smallest guy we've seen. Because I don't know a priori necessarily what the smallest value is. Maybe there's a negative 3 in there. So here's the current smallest value. So it's 1. No, 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 no. Still 1. Now I can leave him at the start of the list. Now let's repeat. All right, 5 is the current small. Ooh, 2 is the current smallest. Smallest, smallest, smallest. So we're still 2. We can now put 2 at the start of the list. But what do we want to do now programmatically? So we want to swap these guys. And that we can get away with in just one step, or maybe 2 or 3 steps, but a constant number of steps. We're not moving people physically. We're just swapping them. All right, so now I'm going to repeat. But I can also save time. I don't need to look at these guys anymore, because I know they're the smallest. So here we are. 5, smallest. Oh, 4 is the smallest. Oh, there's 3. OK, so what do I do with 3? Well, we'll pull 3 out, put her in her right position. But we need to make room. Shifting everyone, bad idea. So we want to put number 5 where number 3 was. So if we repeat in this process, selecting on each iteration the now smallest element, at the end of the day, are we going to have a sorted list? OK, what's the running time, though, of this thing? Not n factorial. That'd be really bad. But we'll see why in a second. Yeah, not quite n squared lookups, but it is an aggregate big O of n squared again. Well, why? Well, again, let's just try to estimate this, right? Back of the envelope type of calculation. If I need to each time find the smallest element, worst case, how many steps am I going to take? n, because maybe number one is all the way where Thomas is. All right, so worst case, n steps. But how many people do I need to put into position? So I actually need to put n different people into position. So I've got to do as many as n steps, a total of n times. So big O in terms of upper bound, there's another big O of n squared. So we've now talked about two approaches specifically, one other called insertion sort. But thus far, all we've done is big O of n squared. Yeah? So what about this time-saving technique of just starting only where it makes sense to start? Let me go ahead and take these guys out of their misery, if you don't mind giving them a round of applause. You can go ahead and leave your forms with myself on the desk or one of the teaching fellows. Well, let's answer that question directly. Let's go ahead and make room real fast. Thank you very much. And not to dwell on the math here, but just to answer that question head on, let's say selection sort, the last algorithm we just saw, the goal of which was to, again, start at the beginning and walk through the list, selecting each time the then smallest element, and then just put it in its place. Well, how many actual steps am I going to have to take in the worst case? Well, really what was happening was, in the first pass, I might have to walk, say, n steps, right, from left all the way to right. Well, how about the next pass? How many steps do I need to take? Yeah, so that's then n minus 1. But the next pass is then n minus 2. The next pass is then finally just 1 or 0 steps. Right? So this, again, just to get potentially scary for a moment, is what? Yes? No? Is what? N times n, just to give you the textbook formula, is what here? Yeah, plus 1 over 2, which certainly equals specifically n squared plus n over 2. But again, the lesson for Wednesday was constant factors. Let's not worry so much about this. And as n gets really big, if you're taking a billion squared plus another billion, this guy barely matters, at least in aggregate terms. So what we're really talking about is big O of n squared for this algorithm. And again, the reason that I suggested verbally that we just kind of think about it intuitively is that I think it's often easier to figure out the running time of your own algorithms just by thinking it through conceptually. But at the end of the day, if you really want to hone in on how many steps your program's executing, by all means, just sort of sketch it down and using whatever unit is appropriate. In this case, walks among these people. Yeah, question. Can we split the list in half? That was sort of a theme on Wednesday, certainly. Can we split the list in half and do better, perhaps, right? Can we take a divide and conquer strategy? Well, that's actually a good motivation for yet another algorithm. But first, let's take a look at this. So this is about to be a demonstration of at least two of the things we just looked at. So this here is a little Java applet that someone wrote. I'm going to go ahead and specify that I want bubble sort. I'm going to specify that I want a random array of values. We'll leave this as the default. We'll leave the delay at 25. And what you're about to see is a bunch of blue bars. The magnitude, the height of these bars represents visually the size of the number. So the shorter the bar, the shorter the number. The taller the bar, the bigger the number. The goal then is to get a nice sort of sideways pyramid from small to big on the right-hand side. So let's take a look at exactly how bubble sort works when we're actually visualizing it here as opposed to using humans, which is a bit more clunky to visualize the end result. So notice on each pass of this algorithm, the red is simply showing you where the computer is while iterating over, with like a for loop, this array of values. And it's highlighting two values in red each time because it's comparing two adjacent neighbors. And only if the two red bars are out of order are they swapped. But the algorithm continues all the way to the end of the list. But notice it is short-circuiting itself. It's not touching any of the bars at the far right, because that would be foolish. So it, too, seems to be remembering where the list is already sorted. So if we let this go to completion, it's obviously going to sort those values for us. And let's go ahead, though. Well, I think it's sufficiently clear if we assume it's going to sort the list at the end of the day. How about selection sort, by contrast? Let's go ahead and run this slightly faster to save time. All right, and let's run this. So selection sort is perhaps even easier to understand happening. Now highlighted in red is the now currently smallest value. So this was like when I was going through the list with my hand looking for the smallest value. Similarly is this algorithm finding the smallest value and then dropping it in place. all the way on the left. And similarly, does that algorithm ultimately work as well? Unfortunately, it's not necessarily any better. Now, maybe it's easier to code up. Maybe it's harder to code up than bubble sort. That sort of is a subjective opinion. And maybe it requires more memory. Maybe it does not. That's sort of unclear until you think about the implementation details. But at the end of the day, n squared was not so good, right? That was one of the charts we looked at. And when you start to compare something, say, linear versus quadratic, n squared, your program is going to take a lot more time. So can we do better? Well, in fact, we can. And we can tie in some of these concepts that we looked at on Wednesday, namely recursion and also this divide and conquer idea. And Weena actually hit on this exact idea a moment ago. So suppose I'm an algorithm, a program. It's going to be called merge sort. And the input to this algorithm is an array, n elements. Well, how can I go about sorting this? Well, a clever trick last time was to sort of divide the problem in two and then focus on a smaller piece. But to do that repeatedly, again and again, until you whittled the problem down to something that was very small. And that was binary search. Now, unfortunately, we can't do as well as binary search. Can we sort n elements in big O of log n steps, do you think? All right, so no. We can't do as well as binary search. But why, intuitively, can we not likely sort n elements in log of n steps? Yeah, exactly. If you only have log n time, that is steps, at your disposal, how are you going to sort n elements? Because you can't even look at all of them if you only have that many steps. So intuitively, the lower bound on a sorting algorithm seems to be what? N, right? In the best case, you have to at least look at the elements to check if they're sorted. Well, can we do better, though, than n squared? Well, this seems deceptively simple, right? So if n is less than 2, forget it. It's just a single list or an empty list, so it's sorted by nature. But this seems kind of clever. So sort the left half of the elements, then sort the right half of the elements. And apparently, that's it once you merge the sorted halves. Now, there seems to be sort of a circular definition here, right? I mean, what's the problematic at first glance with this thing? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're completely cheating, it seems, because the goal is to sort n elements. And you're saying, OK, I'll just sort n over 2 elements. But you're not even telling me how to sort n over 2 elements. Or are you? Yeah. So this is recursive because it sounds like if you're saying the verb sort left half and sort right half, well, you need a sorting algorithm for that. Well, we're talking about a sorting algorithm. Let's just use merge sort yet again. Let's call ourselves, much like we did call certain functions recursively the other day. Well, how does that work exactly? Well, let's consider, actually, that original example. So we had that list of shuffled values on the board, and that's what our folks lined up as initially. So let's go ahead and get rid of this stuff. But I wrote up before on the top there those same values that were in shuffled order. This algorithm, recall, and you have it on your printout, says to 1, if n is less than 2, return. But here, let's consider a sample problem. So in this case, n is obviously 8. Okay, so it's clearly not less than 2. So we're going to do what? Sort the left half, sort the right half, and then merge the sorted half. So let's just take this leap of faith and assume that whoever coded this up somehow got it right, even though it looks like a completely circular definition. All right, so let's take a look. Here's our list of 8 elements. Let's go ahead and consider the left half of elements. All right, now I need to go ahead and sort this left half. How do I sort the left half? According to that algorithm. Split it into halves and sort its left half. So let's focus now on this left half of it. All right, so now I have an array of size 2. But 2 is not less than 2, so I don't just return immediately. So what do I do? How do I sort a list of 2 elements according to that algorithm? All right, so let's sort the left half and then sort the right half. And here's where it might seem a little stupid, right? So all right, now I'm going to sort the left half, which is the number 4. How do I sort the number 4? Well, it's just 4, right? So again, now at this point, I'm sorting the left half of a list of size 2. So I'm focusing just on 4. What does the sorting algorithm tell me to do now when the list is of size less than 2, though? Just return. So 4. We're going to leave it alone. Now what was the next step? And you're going to have to keep track mentally of where the conversation, where this story is. Sort the right half. So that's this list of size 1. How do you sort it? we'll just return. But now go backwards in your memory. What was the next step that we're supposed to execute? Merge the two halves. So remember, we said, here's a list of size 2. To sort this, you sort the left, sort the right, and then merge them. Well, we sorted the left. It was trivial. We sorted the right. It was trivial. How do we now merge these guys? Well, here's two lists. We need to merge them. So I look at this one and this one. And 2 is smaller. I put it here. I'm left with 4, so I put 4 here. Okay, so this part's simple. Now it starts to get a little weird. Where am I now in the story? What have I just finished doing? Right, I've just finished sorting the left half of those 4 original elements. What was the next step then in this story? Sort the right half. So now I focus here. How do I sort this half? Well, I look at these 2 elements, and my algorithm tells me to sort the left half, then sort the right half, then merge the 2. So let's sort the left half. How do I sort 6? I just return immediately. It's done. How do I sort 8? Well, just return immediately. The list is so short. Now what's the next step in the story? Merge them. Fortunately, they're in orders, but I check. Is 6 less than 8? Yes, so let's merge it by putting 6 down in my answer key and then 8. Now where am I in the story? So now I'm at the merge point, right? Because recall, at this point in the story, we're trying to sort 4 elements. I sorted the left. I sorted the right. Third and final step now in that part of the story is to merge the 2 lists, each of half size. So how do I do this? Well, here's the 2 lists, just to be clear. These 2 and these 2. I have 2 lists, 2 arrays, essentially. Well, I've got a left hand and a right hand. Let's put them to use. I'm going to put my fingers here. And I'm going to I know this list is sorted. So I know the leftmost element is smallest out of all of these. And same here. My left finger, by default, is pointing at the start of the list. And by construction of this half list, it's also the smallest element over here. So if I want to merge 2 lists, that really just amounts to finding the smallest element one at a time, moving your way through the list. So here I am, pointing at 2 and 6. Which is smaller? 2, obviously. So let's put that down in our answer key. Now what do? Well, I'm done merging this element into my answer. So let's update my finger. So now I have to compare 4 and 6. Who comes next in the merger? Just 4, right? So that goes down on my answer key. Now this list is exhausted. So where do all the remaining elements have to come from? This guy. So 6 and 8. And at this point in the story, what is now true? The left half is sorted. Okay, so this is a little weird the first time you see something like this. But even if you're not quite sure how this is working, just trust that all I'm doing is executing that algorithm. Sort left half, sort right half, merge. So now where am I in the story? Left half is sorted. What comes next? Sort the right half. Now this is, again, why you sort of have to keep track carefully when thinking this through. Because the story keeps going deeper and deeper and deeper. And then we sort of bubble back out of this algorithm. So now at this point in the story, it's sort the right half. So here we go. For those of you who got a little lost perhaps on the left half, let's focus now on this one. Here's a list of size 4. How do I sort a list of size 4? All right, so sort the left half and then sort the right half. Let's focus on the left half. Here's a list of size 2. How do I sort it? Just sort the left half, sort the right half. Well, let's focus on the left half. How do I sort the element 1? Well, the list is a size less than 2, so the algorithm told us just return. So just leave the number alone. What about sorting the right half? Same deal. Leave it alone. Third step was to merge these 2. So same process, terribly short lists, but 1 comes before 3. Now those lists are merged. What was the next point in the story? Well, we sorted the left half. Now we sort the right half. Whew, right half. So how do I sort this? Left half is 7. Right half is 5. What do I now do with these 2? You get fewer and fewer answers each iteration, which either is a good thing or a horrible thing. So 5 comes before 7. So here's a list of size 1. Here's a list of size 1. To merge these 2 into a list of size 2, I take the smallest element, and then I take the next element. All right. Finally, where am I? This half appears to be this half is sorted. This half is sorted. What comes next? Well, we're pretty easy now. So now we have 2 lists of size 2. So let's go ahead and merge these into a list of size 4. Let's do the finger thing again. 1 comes first. Update this. 3 versus 5. 3 comes next. Okay, out of that list, so it must be 5 and 7 get dropped in here. Where are we in the story? Well, now we're finally at that very first execution of merge sort, where the point was to sort the big left half, sort the big right half, and we've done that. So what's left? The merge step. So what do we do? Well, presumably, the whole list is of size 8. So we've got 8 holes to fill. So what do we do? Here's our two lists. And just to make this clear, I'll draw this in just like before. Two lists of size 4. Here we go. Two fingers on the boxes. So which comes first? 1, obviously. So now I update this finger. So I have 2 blocked from view here and 3. 2 comes next. What do I do with my fingers? Well, I took the number from the left list. Let's increment my left finger. Now I'm comparing 3 and 4. So 3, oh, whoa. That was supposed to be a 2. So now I'm comparing 3 and 4. What comes next? 3. So I move this finger. So I'm pointing now at 5 and 4. 4 is obviously smaller. So I pull 4 out and move my left finger. Now I've got 5 and 6. So I'm going to pull out 5. I'm going to update my right finger. Now I'm pointing at 6 and 7. 6 comes next. I update my left finger. Now I've got 8 and 7 pointed at. 7 comes next. And then finally, 8. OK. Took a while to walk through it, but the list is sorted. Okay, if you didn't follow that the first time around, that's totally fine. I would urge you to follow along at home, say with a list of size 4. Choose 4 random numbers and walk through it again, because this kind of circular argument, even though it actually does work, can tend to bend the mind a bit the first time you see it. So here's a sorted list. How many steps did that take asymptotically? In our big O notation, is this algorithm as bad as the others, n squared? So it actually is n log n. Well, let's try the intuitive approach. Why is this thing n log n, which just mathematically is better than n times n, which is n squared? All right, so what did I do? Well, every time I split the list in 2, again and again and again, and that should immediately henceforth suggest to you logarithmic something or other, right? Divide it by 2 by 2 by 2. But there's this merger process. So the question really boils down to is how many times do I split the list in half, and that's log n. But then how many times do I have to look at each of the elements every time I've split the list in 2? Well, the first time I split the list in 2, I then had to look at, ultimately, all of these elements. I had to compare 2 and 4 and 6 and 8. And then I had to compare 1 and 3 and 5 and 7. That is, I had to touch n numbers. But I'm going to divide the list in half again and again and again, but only log n times. But each time, I've got to touch those elements, because I've got to compare them when merging. So in effect, you're doing something log n times, but on each iteration, you've got to look at or touch n elements, hence n times log n. OK, it's feeling kind of dry. Let's take this approach to see if we can at least convince you before adjourning. And we'll chalk it up to this room being a little stuffier than our last. Or this just being dry material. All right. So if that didn't convince you intuitively, and odds are it doesn't the first time around, let's just think about what the algorithm is telling us. So here's that algorithm. Sort left half, sort right half, merge. That's all there is to this algorithm, except for that so-called base case, the one that special case is the answer. So what does this mean? Well, if we talk about the running time of this algorithm, if the list is less than size 2, you're done, right? So t equals 0. Running time is 0. But what if instead you actually have a bigger list? Well, the time it takes to sort a list of size n is clearly equal to the size it takes to sort a list half that size, plus the time it takes to sort the other half, plus the time it takes to merge. So I'll just wave my hand at that and just call it big O of n. But we can more specifically just say it's n. And why is that? Well, if you've got n over 2 elements, and another n over 2 elements, and you want to merge those two lists, again, you have to do this finger walking thing, where you touch every element once and only once. So to sort n elements takes that many steps, if we take the mathematical approach instead of the intuitive approach. Well, what does this mean? Well, let's consider one example. And this will be our final mathematical exercise today. In the worst case, how long does it take to sort 16 elements? So if it's 16 squared, that's pretty bad. That's 256 operations. Well, let's consider this. If that math is right, so the running time to sort 16 elements is what? The time it takes to sort 8 elements, plus the time it takes to sort another 8 elements, plus the time it takes to merge 16 elements. So do you agree that this is true? OK, this is one of these recurrence functions or recurrence relations, though, unfortunately, because now we have to answer that question. And again, just to sort of spoil the math here, well, let's ask ourselves, what's T of 8? Well, recursively, that is circularly, it's just that. What about T of 4? It's just that. What about T of 2? Well, it's just that. But here's the catch. What's T of 1? That's 0. So now, if we are taking this back of the envelope approach, what can we now do? Well, we know what T of 1 is. We can just plug it in there. And that gives us what? Yeah, it gives us T of 2, which we can plug in there. That gives us T of 4, which we can then plug in there. And we can go back and back. And then we can finally answer the question, how long does it take to sort 16 elements? And here's the math for the spoiler. But notice that if we do all that math, and this is, again, lots of numbers, but it just does the math I just described, the running time for sorting 16 elements using merge sort ultimately equals 2 times the running time to sort each half list plus the merging process, which is 48 plus 16, which is 64, which is, in fact, what? N log n for n equaling 16. So it's not as bad as 16 squared, which would have been 256. So we've taken this approach of sort of divide and conquer using recursion, that idea of recursion. The end result is that we've saved time. But again, nothing is for free here. Nothing is for free. So what price have we had to pay to make merge sort work? Yeah? So you do lose the short circuit ability. That is true. So the lower bound on this algorithm, omega, is in fact also n log n, which is not as good as linear n. So that's a price. What other price have we paid? Sorry? There's a lot of memory. So it's not clear from our Blackboard example, but you actually need more RAM to do this. You need temporary space to do the merging process. But I honestly would say there's yet another trade-off here. Complexity of either understanding or implementation, right? That is a reasonable metric. If you yourself, the developer, have no clue how your visionaire cipher is working, I mean, that is a price you pay. Similarly here, if you don't understand something like the code you're writing, I mean, that in and of itself is a trade-off that you need to bear in mind. But the upside is the following. The last demonstration I'll pull up here doesn't just show us one of these algorithms, but rather shows us three at once. So this little Java applet here allows us to choose three different sorts. And needless to say, there are many other sorts invented in this world than the ones we've seen today. Let's go ahead and choose, say, select bubble sort. Let's go ahead and choose selection sort. And then finally, let's go ahead and choose merge sort. And to simulate this, again, we have bars. Shorter they are, the smaller the number. Bigger they are, the bigger the number. I'm going to try best I can to click all three of these at once so we run them simultaneously. Here we go. Running all three of these algorithms simultaneously. One's n squared, one's n squared, one's done. N log n. So it makes a difference. We'll see you next week.